Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
And welcome in. I'm Steve Gill, filling in for Todd today, but I'm still gun-total, Bible-thumping, all the other checklist of the descriptions of Todd, just a little taller and filling in for Todd today as he's got some business meetings to take care of. But rest easy. We've got plenty to talk about. We'll get to your phone calls and comments. Got a great list of guests today as well, and hope you'll stay with us the entire time. If not, you can always catch us on the various podcasts, Rumble and FaceTime and other outlets as well. But the theme today is going to be a consistent one. I think that we've been hearing a lot about, not only here, but on other media outlets, who was really running the Biden White House. We find out more and more about the cover-ups, the lies, the distortions, whether it was the COVID testing that was not really done. You may remember in the early days of COVID, we were being told, take the vaccine because it will keep you from getting COVID. And then they changed that to, well, it'll make it less likely that you get a serious case of COVID. They later changed it from it's been thoroughly tested and it's thoroughly safe to, well, it's been tested. They left off the thoroughly safe portion. So they lied about COVID. And now they're backing off. We're getting more and more medical reports and indications that they're no longer going to require the vaccine for healthy people, for children, even for many in the elderly class that were being told, you have to take this or you will die. And if you weren't elderly, you have to take this or you're going to kill your grandma. I mean, all the hysteria, the sky is falling junk we were getting from the Biden administration proved to be a lie. And you had the little Cupid doll press secretary out there every day just dispensing her lies over and over again on behalf of the Biden administration. So we know they lied about COVID, and they were covering up the lies and the dangers of COVID, but they were covering up worse than that. They were covering up Joe Biden's mental incapacity. We're hearing a lot now from media outlets and authors like Jake Tapper and others who are writing books going into the apology mode of what they should have said, should have done in order to sell their books now. But they were certainly covering it up when they were there, when they were seeing every day that the man lacked the capacity, not just mentally, but physically to do the job. Lest we forget him falling off his bicycle. Lest we forget him wandering around stage, shaking hands with invisible people. The man lacked the physical capacity in addition to the mental capacity. And his hard-working days of showing up about 10 a.m. downstairs in the White House and vacating with the lid shut, as they say in the media, means no other news is going to come out today, by about 2 p.m. so he could make his afternoon nap and maybe catch up on some of the midday soap operas. He wasn't working hard, and then you compare that to what you see with President Trump, where the man makes the Energizer Bunny look like a slacker. I mean, Trump is going almost 24 hours a day, whether it's here in the U.S. or whether it's internationally, and making additional stops and negotiations every step of the way. So we know they were covering up Joe Biden's physical incapacity. We're learning more and more that they were hiding his mental incapacity. And now we're learning more and more that his diagnosis of prostate cancer that is metastasized, meaning that this is not some sudden surge of disease, but that it is a long-lasting, deadly disease that has been covered up. Now, the Bidens brought in their captive puppet family physician for the last 4 years to cover up his real medical diagnoses. This guy ought to be losing his medical license. not only was he violating his oath under the Constitution as a government official to be honest and truthful and abide by the law, he was covering up for his personal friends, the Bidens, in order to keep them in power, to avoid any prospect that perhaps the 25th Amendment would be asserted to remove him from office. And of course, you had Jill Biden, Dr. Jill Biden, who's not a medical doctor. She's just a PhD education doctor. But they made it clear, you got to call her Dr. Jill Biden. You know, look, I have a law degree. That gives me a doctor of jurisprudence. I don't insist that people call me Dr. Jill. But, oh, you had to call Jill doctor. And then she's sitting in the Air Force One desk reviewing the binders for Joe, telling him what's up, what's down, what he should be for. She actually managed a cabinet meeting, and yet the media didn't have any objections to that, didn't question that at all. Can you imagine if Donald Trump started sitting Melania Trump at the head of the table in cabinet meetings to run the cabinet meetings, how the left and the media's heads would explode? But as long as it was the Bidens, it was in full cover-up mode. Again, physically, mentally, and now we learn his medical records were being disguised or they were failing to do the basic medical test to determine whether the guy was capable of doing the job. Now, the evidence is there that he was not capable of doing the job. Again, whether it was mentally, whether it was physically, whether it was just policy-wise, he was not doing the job for the American people. So it raises the question, who is actually running the White House? Now, there's Susan Rice, there's, you know, Barack Obama, we hear from time to time, might have been the puppet master behind the scenes, like in The Wizard of Oz. Do not look behind the screen. But who was behind the screen? And not just at the White House, making the decisions that are life and death, not just for the men and women in our military, as the commander-in-chief is not really commanding. Who was really making the calls in the White House and beyond? Now, you've got all these cabinet officials, Pete Buttigieg at Transportation and others that failed miserably as running the bureaucracy of government under the Biden years. Who was telling them what to do? Who was giving instruction to cabinet officials from the White House, speaking for the president? Because we know that in cabinet meetings, the president couldn't even identify who the people were around the table that were his top senior cabinet officials. So he didn't know who they were. Clearly was not giving them any instructions from on high. Who was giving instructions to the cabinet officials to implement the policies or so-called policies of the Biden administration? We know they were bringing in millions and millions of illegals. What were the kickbacks or the trade-offs of that? Who was benefiting from that within the White House, within the hierarchy of the Biden family, Biden Inc., as it should be called, the business of Bidenism that was profiting the Biden family? Who was making the calls? Was Hunter Biden making calls beyond the Ukrainian policies that were putting money into his pockets? Was it Susan Rice? Was it Barack Obama? Who were the people behind the scenes that have not yet been identified making the calls? Now, we know the media was covering it up. They weren't asking these questions. They're still not asking these questions because they don't want us to know the answers. And frankly, they probably don't want you to know that they knew the answers at the time. It's kind of back to the old Watergate era. What did they know and when did they know it? Well, you've got these journalists now writing books like Jake Tapper, writing books talking about how he probably should have done better, probably should have done his job. Well, now he's just trying to sell books because he wasn't inquisitive. He wasn't curious at the time, and he's really not curious now. They're still in cover-up mode, still not asking, still not answering. Who was really running the show during the Biden administration? We may never know. We may never know, but we're going to learn more as hopefully Congress conducts investigations. Hopefully you find out who was running the auto pen, for example. Joe Biden was granting pardons left and right by the thousands when he wasn't even at the White House, when he wasn't even signing the pardons. Now, look, I worked in the White House years ago during the end of the first Bush White House and the beginning of the Clinton White House. And I'll tell you that, you know, there's a lot of times when you want a photograph of the president or you need a proclamation congratulating somebody on their 50th wedding anniversary or their 100th birthday, that you want a letter from the president. And whether it's Joe Biden or Donald Trump or George Bush or Bill Clinton, they're not sitting there signing proclamations and letters of congratulations to people. Those are where the auto pen are used. Now, again, they'll use an ink pen so that if you lick your finger and rub your thumb across the signature, it'll smear because it's real ink. But it's not really signed by the president. But you don't use the auto pen to sign legislation. We've already seen all these efforts by Donald Trump to with his big black pen sign the executive orders in the Oval Office at the Resolute desk. He's actually signing. When you see Donald Trump signing proclamations, he's really signing. They're not just having people crank these things out in the back room. But with Joe Biden, apparently whether he was at the White House, in Delaware at the beach, falling off his bicycle or whatever he might have been up to, or somewhere else, they were cranking out legislation. They were cranking out pardons left and right. Now, Congressman Tim Burchett, a congressman from East Tennessee, says he suspects that many of those pardons were being sold by the people operating the auto pens. So in addition to trying to figure out who's been running the White House under the Biden years, who was running the auto pen? Who were running the pardons through the auto pen? And what benefits were those making those decisions? Because again, Joe Biden was not making them. What were they getting? Were they getting job offers? Were they getting promises of compensation when they left? Were they getting paid directly for pardons? Now, in Tennessee, where we're broadcasting from in Memphis, we had a pardon for parole scandal years ago. We had a governor leave office early. Lamar Alexander took Ray Blanton's place because they were selling pardons here in Tennessee. Now, some of the members of Congress are saying they now know who was running the auto pens. Is it time for some perp walks there? Is it time for the Attorney General to start some prosecutions of who was signing things in the president's name that we still can't identify? They may know in Congress. Their investigations may have produced results, but we may not know who was really running the auto pen and what, if any, compensation they were getting. Congressman Tim Burchett of Knoxville says he's going to get to the bottom of it, and hopefully he will. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the auto pens and Joe Biden's lack of mental capacity. You know, if I go down to the courthouse and sign documents, if I do a contract today and I'm not mentally capable, I'm in a dementia situation, I'm in a senior citizen center, those contracts are voided. Are the actions that Joe Biden took for the last year or 2 years voidable because he was not mentally competent to be making those decisions? It's basic contract law. It's basic law. Will that apply to the president, or is a dementia-ridden, mentally incompetent, not even able to be prosecuted because his lack of capacity president able to have his actions voided, including maybe the appointment of Supreme Court justices? We'll talk about that more when the Todd Starnes Show continues in just a moment. I'm Steve Gill, filling in for Todd, and we'll be right back.
Folks, we have some exciting news about MyPillow. They're having their first ever mega sale. Oh, that was, we needed some sound effects.
Where did that come from?
Mega sale. MyPillow having their first ever mega sale on overstock clearance and brand new products. For example, Ben Dieter, you're going to need these. You need 50%. You're going to save over 50% on flannel sheets. Queen size bed, only $59.98. King size sheets, $69.98. And they sell out fast every year. So you got to get an order that right now. You can also save 30% on their brand new My Crosses. They're designed in the likeness of the one that Mike Lindell has worn every day for over 20 years. They come in men's and women's styles, and they're made right here in the USA. Get the 2025 six-piece My Towel set for only $29.98. Their quantities are extremely low, so you're going to want to get them now before they go. And I can't forget to mention the best-selling standard MyPillow. I have six of them. I like a lot of pillows. $14.98. That is a huge deal. So take advantage of the first-ever mega sale. Go to MyPillow.com, use promo code STARNS, or call 800-839-8506. That's 1-800-839-8506. But wait, there's more. Remember that $75 free shipping rule, Ben Dieter?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that ship has sailed, baby. The train has left the station. Because right now, for a limited time, every order at MyPillow ships for free. MyPillow.com, promo code STARNS, or call 800-839-8506.
And welcome back in. This is the Todd Starnes Show. I'm Steve Gill, filling in for Todd today. He will be back in action in the big seat in the Liberty University Studios studio tomorrow. We were talking just a moment ago about the incapacity of Joe Biden and who was really running things at the White House. And I mentioned that as a lawyer by background, you can't sign a contract that's legitimate if you're 10 years old. You're not capable. You're too young. If you're not mentally capable of understanding or having what's known as compass mentis, if you're non-compass mentis, to throw in a little bit of Latin for the Latin teachers who are listening, you're not capable of signing a legitimate contract, of taking legal action. And that's the question with Joe Biden's mental incapacity, that as we learn more and more that not only did they cover it up, but it was worse than we were told and longer than we were advised, that it was dating way back. And we find out now that perhaps his medical incapacity with prostate cancer also dated way back. There's a clip of Joe Biden 2 years ago mentioning the fact that he is also a victim of cancer. Whoa, they kind of let that slip. That wasn't the headline. So 2 years ago, he knew he had prostate cancer. His brother, after he left the decision to run for re-election aside and put Kamala Harris as the Democratic nominee, his brother Frank said, well, we'll be able to spend more time with Joe with the time he has left with us. Boy, again, that's kind of some good foreshadowing of what they knew and when they knew it. So Biden's acknowledging he had cancer 2 years ago, his brother a year ago acknowledging that there was a limited timeline of Joe being with us on this earth. And yet again, the media ignoring it, covering it up, pretending that it wasn't the case. But his mental incapacity raises serious issues of the actions he took as president, if he was actually taking them, of whether or not he had the capacity to make those decisions, including appointing Supreme Court justices. And if the decisions he was making were being signed by AutoPen and not by him, was he even physically making the decisions in addition to mentally making the decisions? Now, Congress is going to investigate this. Will they retract any of the actions that were taken under the Biden administration? Will they go to court and demand that they be overturned because he was not capable of doing this? That's what the 25th Amendment is supposed to be for. If you have a president who is incapable of performing their duties, whether it's mentally, whether it's physically, you either temporarily or permanently remove them from office. That wasn't done because the powers that be that were running the show under the guise of Joe Biden kind of like running the show. Now, was Jill Biden a part of it? I'm sorry. Dr. Jill Biden a part of it? By the way, some have criticized President Trump for pointing out that he doesn't understand how Dr. Jill Biden could not have seen that her husband was mentally and physically incapacitated, that he was suffering from prostate cancer, and they have attacked Trump, saying, well, surely Donald Trump knows that she's not an actual medical doctor. Trump has responded with a tweet pointing out that apparently the left and the journalists don't understand sarcasm. He knows she's not a medical doctor. Unfortunately, many on the left that were suggesting that Joe make her Surgeon General at one point didn't understand, unlike Donald Trump, that she was not a medical doctor. But whether it was Dr. PhD Jill Biden or wife and spouse Jill Biden, she knew what was going on. She knew that Joe didn't have a clue who he was, where he was. And even that taped conversation conducted by the Attorney General Herr reveals that he was completely lost. He was a lost ball in tall weeds, to use a golf course example. And yet it was being covered up. They couldn't prosecute him for his crimes because, as the Attorney General pointed out, he'll come off to a jury as just a well-meaning old man who's lost and confused. So he gets a pass for not being honest about what documents he was hiding, what documents he was keeping that he shouldn't have had possession of as vice president, violating the law. But he gets a pass because he was just a doddering old fool, but was allowed to continue as president of the United States, wielding the auto pen, or whoever else was wielding it on his behalf. When we come back after a break, we're going to talk to Kevin Cooper, who is the chair of the Miami-Dade Republican Party. In Miami, you've seen about a 50,000 registered vote shift from Republicans, or to Republicans from Democrats, a huge shift in what was a formerly blue Miami. Now it's a red Miami. Kevin Cooper, the chairman of the Miami-Dade Republican Party, is going to join us, tell us how they did it, and more importantly, what the complications and implications are moving forward. I'm Steve Gill. We'll be back with more of the Todd Starnes Show in a moment.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The trust issue.
There has always been a mass trust issue because politicians, media, nobody does what they're supposed to do. Now, I say, for me, listen, he's 83, so he's a little stumbly, he's a little rumbly. I can't point to anything that he's done as president that he did.
No, as that is running for his next 4 years. Yeah.
But I'm saying, I want, not you, but I want somebody to tell me, well, when did you know it was bad? If you knew, why did you wait?
Yeah. So can I just get in for that,
can
though?
I get in
he
for
said
a second?
That it was after he moderated the debate.
I'm sorry, baby. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about if you're telling me that hundreds of people knew that he was not able to do his job, then where the hell was everybody?
He did his job.
Whoopi Goldberg and The View just trying to figure out, why didn't anybody tell us? It wasn't in our talking points. The View operates solely from their Democratic Party talking points, and apparently it was not the talking points to say, Joe's out of it, man. He's lost his mind. He's mentally and physically incompetent. You should have told us. Whoopi's part of the media. She's blaming the media for not telling her to tell us what they knew. Is it racist to say, is that the pot calling the kettle black? In any event, Whoopi complaining that the media didn't tell them what they should have told us, and it's all our fault, apparently. I'm Steve Gill, filling in for Todd Starnes. This is the Liberty University studio, site of the Todd Starnes Show, and Todd's going to be back in tomorrow. In the meantime, some great news for Republicans in Florida, in addition to the fact that they're making Florida great again, and a lot of folks are starting to think we need to do whatever Florida is doing in other parts of the country. Governor Ron DeSantis saying that when he's trying to figure out what to do policy-wise, he just looks at what they're doing in the blue states, what Democrat governors are doing, and he does the opposite. Well, that must be working in Miami as well, because Miami-Dade, the Republican Party has now moved about 50,000 voter registrations ahead of the Democrats, where just a year or so ago, they were 50,000 votes behind the Democrats. A guy who's been a key player in making that happen is Kevin Cooper. He is the chair of the Miami-Dade Republican Party. And Kevin, good to have you with us.
Hey.
So exactly how did you make this transition? I mean, some of it is cleaning out the voter rolls of, I guess, the same ones that are getting Social Security inappropriately, dead people, illegal aliens. So cleaning up the voter rolls was part of it. But was there more that went on to make this shift?
Oh, absolutely. Look, the voter rolls was a last-minute change that came in at the last moment, but we were going to do this regardless. We are even among the people who are voting, who are registered to vote but are not actually voting, we are still very close to flipping the county. But among active voters, those who are participating in the process, who have voted and are voting, we are way ahead in voter registration. It's a message. It's a strong message that the people of Miami-Dade County, the people of Florida, like Republican policy. They like the results that our party has to offer, and they're switching their registration to join us.
Well, and you're seeing it statewide as well as in these formerly blue territories like Miami. My dad was a career Air Force fighter pilot. I mentioned to you earlier, we lived in Homestead when it was pretty blue, but you're telling me even Homestead has flipped.
Homestead has a Republican mayor and quite a few Republican city commissioners. We're seeing this across the county, that when we go into these municipalities and we start telling people, hey, that guy's a Democrat, or hey, that guy doesn't stand for what you think they stand for, they actually are voting Republican. And we've seen this in mayorship after mayorship, city commission after city commission. We now have 11 members of the state house out of Miami-Dade that are Republican. We've got 4 state senators. You know, Miami-Dade is a county, but it could be a state just based on the amount of people that we have in our county. We've got more registered Republicans than several states, if we're being entirely honest. I think we have more registered Republicans in Miami-Dade than they do in Alaska, in Montana, Wyoming. We've got 3 members of Congress, which certain states don't even have. And we are at the forefront of putting forward a Republican revolution in this county.
So, Kevin, this is a great opportunity. As you point out, you've got the numbers. If people turn out and vote, you can put more Republicans in office. But that's the opportunity. Now you have to deliver. Are these Republicans poised to deliver? Or are we going to see the same sort of frustration where we're seeing in Washington, Republicans in name only block Republican conservative policies? Now you have to deliver.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. But if you look at the results of Miami, you know, it's not just, right, you're correct in that. It's not just simply electing the individuals, but making sure, obviously, they're doing the right things once they're in. And I'm proud to report to you and to people across the country that here in Miami-Dade, it's working, right? Our candidates, our elected officials are getting the job done. We're seeing it time and time again where people are leaving blue states, coming to Miami-Dade as a kind of a refuge, a safe refuge from the policies that are destroying blue states. I can give you one example of an individual who owned a company in California, and they made his business illegal. He was in the fur business. They made his business illegal, and they moved their business here. $20 million now are being invested right here in Miami-Dade County. We're hearing that every single day. So our elected officials are building a business-friendly environment. They're protecting enterprise. They're protecting freedom and security. Miami, the city of Miami, recently was voted as one of the safer cities from the crime percentage shifted so dramatically that now it's safer to be in the city of Miami. So it's a really exciting time. People are buying real estate here like hot potatoes, and it's an exciting time in this county.
Well, and you can get much better New York style pizza and bagels and delis. The New York accents still have to sound a little weird, though.
We've got all the New Yorkers down here, but you know it's a beautiful experience when you meet somebody and they tell you that they're here for freedom and they're here for economic opportunity, and that's one of the biggest reasons. And to kind of go back to your earlier question, one of the biggest reasons we're seeing this shift is because individuals have left places like Cuba, places like Venezuela. One of the biggest shifts we've seen in the last year and a half, 2 years, is among the Jewish community on Miami Beach. That used to be a reliably blue Democrat voting bloc, and the Democrats completely abandoned Israel. They completely abandoned the issue in the Middle East. President Trump is one who brought the Abraham Accords, and so that results, right, we're talking about, again, results as it relates to politics. Those results of Republican policies have caused people to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, Democrat Party is not standing for what we thought they stood for. It's not my grandparents' Democrat Party. So they're switching over to the Republican Party.
Kevin Cooper with us, the chair of the Miami-Dade Republican Party, celebrating the growth of Republican voters in Miami-Dade County, turning Miami-Dade from blue to red, and now putting in the policies to keep it going that direction. The New York Post recently reported about $14 billion in tax bases moved from New York to Florida, not all of it to Miami, but a significant portion to South Florida. You're really seeing that in areas like Brickell, that economic boom town in Miami that's basically becoming the Wall Street of the South.
Absolutely. There's no more parking lots in Brickell. They've all been put high rises on there. The price of real estate there is very, very high. But I've met a lot of folks there who've come from New York. Listen, we've got year-round sunshine, year-round freedom, and year-round just is a wonderful, wonderful place to live. There's no crime. It's a fantastic place to live, and it has a vibe that people really like. And then you couple that with politics, right, with strong conservative policy. I don't understand how more people are not moving here, to be honest with you.
Well, you're going to have to do the same thing we're starting to think in Tennessee. Tell people we're full, because we're seeing the same thing where all those folks moving from Chicago, from L.A., from New York. The concern, and you have to share it in South Florida and Miami, do they bring the disconnected Democrat values that they're supposedly leaving and then infect South Florida and Florida with the same policies that have failed where they left? Do they bring those with them?
We're not seeing that. I think, well, you know, there's a good mix, right, of people who are – Miami has a very – is a melting pot of a bunch of different folks. And what's nice is that there's a lot of exchange between different people. So in places like Brickell, you have Cuban restaurants, right? So it's easy to meet a person who came from Cuba who will tell you the horrors of communism and so on. And you meet people from New York who meet people from California, and they both kind of have the same story, right? Miami and Florida have become kind of a refuge for folks who have a leading policies that are destroying lives.
I was with Governor Henry McMaster of South Carolina a year or so ago and doing a panel, and somebody asked him, what do you think about the folks that are moving to South Carolina from New York and Chicago and L.A.? Are you concerned that they're bringing the disconnected values and might water down what makes South Carolina great? And he responded in that great South Carolina accent, well, most of them, we believe, are bringing our kind of values to town. And for the ones that aren't, we just say, bless your heart. So maybe some bless your hearts to some of the ones that are disconnected when they get to Miami-Dade County. Kevin, congratulations. I know a lot of folks are going to be taking credit, and there's a lot of credit to go around. But as you point out, it was a team effort. Y'all have achieved a great first step. Now hold their feet to the fire and make sure all those Republican voters turn out and vote. Those Republican legislators and representatives do what they said they were going to do, and we can keep building upon it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think you're going to continue to see this trend. We're delivering the results. It's a combination of doing the work and delivering the results.
I like the ball caps that say, Make America Florida. And I guess we could say the same thing. Make America Miami-Dade County. Kevin Cooper, thanks for being with us. We appreciate you and keep up the great work. We'll talk again soon. Again, Kevin Cooper, who's the chair of the Miami-Dade GOP. Again, great opportunity. You've got more Republican voters. The voter rolls are in the right direction. But as we're seeing with the big, beautiful bill in Washington, D.C., you know, the Democrats are voting 100% against everything. I mean, in whatever reason they've got in their twisted, contorted minds is whatever 80-20 issue that's out there, whether it's boys in girls' sports, whether it's, you know, supporting and having margaritas with gangbangers and thugs, they're taking the wrong side of every issue. They're not going to support doing right by America. But it's those Republicans that are fighting against the big, beautiful bill that threaten wins in the midterm to keep the fight going, threaten the loss of the Senate that would keep President Trump from appointing Supreme Court justices in a second 2 years of his term. You got to win the policies, but you've got to recognize that take the win, you don't need to run up the score. And hopefully some of the Republicans will start learning that lesson as well. We are going to talk about wins when we come back in a few moments. Donald Trump is winning left and right. John Deere has just announced they're going to be doing another $20 billion in investment in the U.S. to make their John Deere products. Nothing runs like a deer. It's going to be running through America. Other wins in the Trump arena economically. The tariffs are falling in the favor of Donald Trump. Prices are down. Egg prices are down. Gas prices are down. Why can't we take these wins and make the big, beautiful bill a win in Congress? Maybe we need some better congressmen, even on the Republican side, to make that happen. I'm Steve Gill, filling in for Todd Starnes, and we'll be back more of the Todd Starnes Show in just a moment.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
I'm going to ask you, what? Yeah. So a well-justified fear of persecution?
Yeah, they thought that their farms were being burned down and they would be killed. I think that's a pretty good justification for wanting to come. They're afraid for their lives.
And should it be applied in an even-handed way? That's an easy
question. Our foreign policy doesn't require even-handedness. It requires prioritizing the interests of the United States.
The phrase says you are entitled to entrance as a refugee if you demonstrate a well-justified fear of persecution.
No, you're not entitled.
So
you're
can
allowed.
You have a different standard based upon the color of somebody's skin? Would that be acceptable?
Well, I'm not the one arguing that. Apparently you are, because you don't like the fact that they're
I'm
white, and that's why they're
coming.
I'm
just asking you to say that would be unacceptable.
Well, no,
that
I would say that the United States...
a very easy thing
The United
to say.
States has a right to pick and choose who they allow into the United
Even
States.
Even based on the color of somebody's skin.
No, you're the one that's talking about the color of their skin, not me. These
you're
are people
refusing
whose farms were being burned down and they were killed because of the color of their skin.
That's Marco Rubio going toe-to-toe with Virginia Senator Tim Kaine in a very contentious argument over the fact that the U.S. is admitting 59 white refugees from South Africa, where the government of South Africa, where the black leadership in South Africa, where the black population in South Africa is chanting, kill the Boers, referring to the white farmers in South Africa. They are promoting genocide, burning out the farmers, killing them, murdering them. And the Democrats, once again, taking the small side of every issue, wanting to fight against refugee status for white folks who are leaving a regime that is murdering people because of their skin color. Marco Rubio, in my view, gets the most improved player in the Trump cabinet. Look, I had some skepticism about Marco Rubio as Secretary of State. He's been a superstar. Now, I'm not sure if I give... Scott Bessent, the Treasury Secretary, the most valuable player award. He's definitely at the top of that heap, but Trump has a lot of most valuable players. J.D. Vance is the VP, exceeding expectations. But Marco Rubio has far exceeded, in my view, the expectations I had for him. And man, he's taken it to the Democrat senators like Van Hollen and others, not taken any junk from them, and dishing it right back to them with facts and fire. And for too often, Republicans have tried to rely on facts and not brought the fire. But Marco, man, bringing the facts and the fire. And not just him. President Trump, just a few minutes ago, had the South African president in the Oval Office. And President Trump just dimmed the lights in the Oval Office and played for the president of South Africa. The brutal videos of South African leaders calling for the killing of white South African farmers. He goes on to show the burial sites of white farmers, the videos. He's showing the president of South Africa what's happening in his country, letting him know, we know what he knows. At some point, there must be killing, is what they're chanting in South Africa, targeting white people in South Africa. I mean, what a powerful moment. Trump is winning on all fronts. He goes to the Middle East in epic treatment from Middle Eastern leaders, treating him like royalty, brings back trillions of dollars in investment and trade for the U.S., and then brings this guy, the president of South Africa, into the White House and shows him and the nation what's going on in South Africa, while Democrats are trying to defend the barbaric behavior being targeted at white people. And while they have no problem with millions of illegals being flown in, brought in by the Biden administration, while they continue to embrace and support gangbangers and rapists and murderers and fight against their deportation, Donald Trump continues to win on every front. But the boldness of bringing a world leader, the leader of South Africa, into the Oval Office and on video showing him what's happening in his country to point out that we know what's happening there and we know he knows. Man, you talk about powerful. Now, again, Trump's winning on multiple other fronts. I just mentioned a few moments ago that John Deere is making a $20 billion investment commitment into the U.S. Canada has decided to dump their reciprocity tariffs. Remember all the hue and cry just a few weeks ago of, you know, Canada's going to impose all the tariffs. The tourism from Canada to the U.S. is going to end. You know, American consumers will be destroyed by Trump's tariffs. Where are we now? Egg prices are down. Gas prices are down. The countries are bending the knee to strike tariff deals with the U.S. to bring back that reciprocity of, we're not going to hit you harder than you're hitting us, but we are going to hit you with tariffs, with taxes, if you continue to keep our products out of your countries, both with tariffs, taxes, or non-tariff barriers to trade. I mean, in some cases, it's the non-tariff barriers that keep people out of the countries and keep our products out. Where are American cotton products? They're not being able to go into a lot of countries. Soybeans, corn, beef. Trump's winning on all fronts. We're going to talk more about it when we come back in the next hour. And we're also going to talk with Jeff Collier. He's running for governor in Kansas, and he is a PhD. He is a physician who's actually suffered from prostate cancer himself. We'll talk about that with him in a moment.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's us, that's right, I love this American ride.
And welcome in, this is the Todd Starnes Show. I'm Steve Gill, filling in for Todd today. He will be back in action in the big chair tomorrow, but in the meantime, we'll take you through another few hours of the Todd Starnes Show, again, live from the Liberty University studios. You're going to be seeing a lot of this in the news over the next 24 hours. President Trump, literally just moments ago, was meeting with the president of South Africa. And as the president of South Africa denied white genocide taking place in his country, where farmers are being forced off their property, killed, hacked to death, while government officials in South Africa are shouting, kill the Boer, kill the white people. President Trump allows 59 of these families to get immediate refugee status to escape the carnage going on in South Africa. You have some on the left and some in South Africa saying that these Afrikaans, these white Africans, are cowards for fleeing the country rather than being murdered and hacked to death in front of their own families. Now, about 80% of the food consumed in South Africa is generated by these farmers. There will be starvation level in South Africa within just a matter of years. And they will be begging and pleading for American tax dollars to feed them, to clothe them, to house them, to take care of them after they have murdered the people who were feeding them. So President Trump brings the president of South Africa into the Oval Office. And the president of South Africa starts denying that genocide is taking place, denying that his country is encouraging the murder of white farmers. And Trump literally says, turn down the lights. And in the Oval Office, with the media assembled, they air the video of government officials shouting, kill the Boers, calling for genocide, while the president of South Africa looks very, very uncomfortable, and appropriately so. This makes the confrontation with J.D. Vance and President Trump and President Zelensky look like a campfire sing-along. And then, of course, NBC interjects, well, what about the Qatari jet that was being donated to the U.S.? And Trump literally shuts down the NBC reporter saying, what are you talking about? We're talking about genocide here. And you want to distract from that because you don't want to cover the truth. Get out of here. No more questions for you. I feel like I was watching Saturday Night Live. No soup for you. No more questions for NBC. Anyway, you're going to see plenty of that in front of millions around the world. Trump just exposed what South Africa is doing in real time. How can you not love this president? In honor of President Trump, I'm drinking a Diet Coke right now, just in his honor. So here's to you, Mr. President. Joining us on the line, we've been talking a lot today about who was really running the Biden White House, covering up what was going on with COVID, covering up his mental incapacity, covering up his physical ailments and disabilities, and covering up what appears to have been a metastasizing episode of prostate cancer. Dr. Jeff Collier from Kansas is the former lieutenant governor of Kansas, former governor of Kansas, is now running for re-election again in Kansas and joins us on the line as well. Jeff, good to have you with us.
It is always great to join you guys.
Well, Jeff, you may not recall, we've actually known each other for a while. I was a White House fellow at the end of Bush. We've actually met a few times, and I saw your name on the list, and I said, wait a minute, I know Jeff.
I know. That's why I was. I had this great smile on my face. And so it is great to see you again.
Well, I'm excited for your prospects. We're going to talk a little bit about the race that's looming in Kansas. But first, you know, you've suffered from prostate cancer. You're a physician. There's no way that Joe Biden just learned, you know, last week while they're trying to distract from the HER tapes showing that he was mentally incapacitated, that his physical incapacities and his physical ailments were much, much worse than we've been told.
You know, I first want to say, you know, my prayers for President Biden and his family, because I know personally how difficult this diagnosis is for the patient and the wife and the kids, you know, as they're trying to go through this thing. And so I have, you know, a tremendous amount of sympathy, you know, there for anybody that goes through prostate cancer. It's a very difficult cancer to deal with. You know, there's 315,000 men in America that get diagnosed with it, and about 35,000 a year. What's amazing to me is that as a surgeon, I had to go back and I wanted to get the best care possible. And as a patient, you need to, you know, take things under control yourself. And, you know, what amazes me the most is that there are some autopsy studies just people that died, and then what else do they find in them? And the most amazing thing is that one out of three men aged 70 to 79, and also one out of five men aged 50 to 59, may have prostate cancer that they don't know about. So it's incredibly common. One out of three in President Biden's case. And so this is a person that, you know, gets an annual physical. He's got the best medical care in the world with this, and yet he is diagnosed with late stage prostate cancer. And that's something that should not happen in the United States of America here. And it's really shocking how this has happened.
And he was getting these physicals, and unlike previous presidents, you worked for a couple, I worked for a couple. They were not being transparent, and they brought in his family physician to basically do the cover up. I'm not sure that guy shouldn't lose his medical license, but at the very least he violated his constitutional and ethical standards for covering this up to the American public when that was part of his job, not just being the friend of the president, but being, you know, our eyes in these kinds of treatments. Again, you know, this goes bigger than just, you know, compassion for the president suffering from this. This was an Absolutely. Intended cover-up.
You know, so here's the way, you know, I look at this. More data is always better. You know, people want to know. And if you will go to our X handle, Dr. Jeff Collier on X, we posted all
And that's Collyer, by the way, Collyer.
Correct. Correct. Thank you. I think Todd may even point to it on his X handle. But when you go and you look at this, I posted President Trump's medical records. I posted President Biden's, and even you know, the first or the last year of President Obama. And what's really interesting is that, you know, most of the time, you know, in President Obama and in President Trump, they'll note in the physical exam, they'll say the genitourinary exam was within normal limits, was normal. And then they will show their PSA level when they draw the labs on it. Not so in Biden. We don't see any of that in all of his physical reports. And this is a cancer that is very slow growing. You know, at first, and then when it gets, then once it accumulates, it starts speeding up. And, you know, sometimes you can, you will see this cancer, in people that could even be advanced and they don't show any, they don't show an elevated PSA, but they have symptoms and other things going on. But that's pretty rare. It does happen occasionally. And so why are we not checking the leader of the free world for prostate cancer when we know that one out of three men have it?
And this will likely cause more men to get their PSA tested, so it may have some residual benefit. My own dad, Jeff Collier with us, Dr. Jeff Collier of Kansas, was diagnosed with prostate cancer in his 70s, got treatment, and treatment has improved dramatically over the last decade. And then in his mid-80s, about the same age as Joe Biden, his PSA started elevating, not badly, just started rising again. And the doctor told my dad, don't worry about it, Lindy, something will get you before this does. And he passed away 5 years ago in his late 80s. But it was not prostate cancer that got him, because, again, the treatment worked. And, you know, early detection, like it is with most other forms of cancer, is your best way to fight back. What do you think the Biden family knew, and when did they know it? Joe Biden, in a speech a couple of years ago talking about cancer, whether it was a gaffe, whether he accidentally told the truth, it'd be the only way he told the truth, said he, you know, also suffers from cancer. And his brother Frank, when he stepped out of the presidential race, acknowledged that hopefully the time he has left will be able to spend with family. They were giving us hints. Nobody paid any attention.
You know, I don't know what they knew and when they knew it. But I think it is something that is important that we do know. I think the public deserves to know, you know, was this malpractice, a flub up, or was this something that was being withheld from people? Because this is the leader of the free world, and, you know, they're going to be watched very, very closely, you know, with it. You know, we want them to, you know, be very fair and open and honest with people. I think that's an expectation. I also respect people's medical privacy overall, but this is something that certainly, you know, has been in his body for years. So,
and raises, you know, questions about all those trips to Delaware. Was he getting treatments that we weren't advised? Again, what right does the public have to know when you're dealing with the leader of the free world? Dr. Jeff Collier with us, by the way. I want to touch on this before we have to let you go.
Sure.
Kansas, former governor of Kansas, when my friend Sam Brownback left as governor of Kansas to become an ambassador for President Trump, you served a year as governor of Kansas and then ran. I would have to argue with you, Jeff, that it might be one of those situations where anybody who wants the job may not be mentally competent to hold it. You've had a sample. You should know better, my friend, but you want to be governor of Kansas again, and I think have a great shot at doing it. What's the status of the campaign? And we're talking about a primary sometime early next year.
In August of next year. So actually the primary is a long ways away, you know, with us, but, you know, I'm a surgeon. I get up early in the morning and we get things done. And, you know, here's the thing is in Kansas, when I left the governorship, I gave them an $850 million surplus. I held the line on taxes. We had a school finance problem that had vexed every governor for the last 50 years, a dozen governors, and I solved it. And I was actually, and what we did is we started making government more efficient. We were the first state to completely privatize our Medicaid program. Something we were DOGE before DOGE was a thing. You know, for example, we actually eliminated about 20% of all of the government jobs that we had in state government, and eliminated three cabinet agencies. And you know what? The world didn't fall apart, and nobody noticed.
Kansas was still flat when you left, Dr. Jeff Collier. If people want to find you, get more about the race, what's that X or website again?
Yeah, so my X handle is Dr. Jeff Collier, and you can find us at Collier for Governor. And we look forward to visiting with you again, because we're going to make Kansas great again.
Jeff, I'll give you the same support I give my friends all the time. I can be for you or against you, whichever you think will help you more. And I'm at your full disposal, my friend. Jeff Collier of Kansas, running for governor. Keep it up, man. We'll talk with you again soon.
Talk to you soon. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll talk with Jeff again soon. Man, again, if you're in Kansas, if you know people in Kansas, he is truly a superstar, and appreciate his insights on the whole prostate issue. And again, if you're a guy and you haven't had your PSA checked, get it checked. Don't wait till it's the stage when the Biden prostate diagnosis was disclosed. We're going to be back talking a little bit about Trump's wins. And what's next for Elon Musk? You know, there's a lot of the media saying, oh, he's leaving because his company is imploding. Why is Elon Musk really leaving as the head of Doge? We'll talk about it in a moment as the Todd Starnes Show continues. I'm Steve Gill filling in for Todd, and we'll be right back. Hey, welcome back. I'm Steve Gill filling in for Todd Starnes. By the way, if you'll go to X at The Gill Report, Facebook, Steve Gill at The Gill Report, you can find links to some of the stories we're talking about today. Elon Musk is departing his role as heading up Doge. Now, by the way, he has been in the Oval Office today while the president of South Africa was being taken to the woodshed by President Trump over the genocide of white farmers in South Africa. Elon Musk, of course, originally from South Africa. He is literally an African-American. But he's in the Oval Office as President Trump doing the takedown of this president of South Africa who's excusing, denying the genocide of white farmers in South Africa as Trump calls for the lights to be turned down and shows video, not just to the president of South Africa, but also to the reporters gathered there. And Elon literally giving this guy the look of death. Now, Elon Musk is, you know, a genius. He's a brilliant business guy. He's one of the most productive businessmen in history. Also very reproductive. I think he has like 14 kids. So he's very productive and very reproductive. But he was in the Oval Office giving the stare down to this South African president denying what's going on in his country. Well, President Trump shows him the video of his leaders, his officials screaming for the death of white people in South Africa. Now, Elon Musk is leaving the position as the head of Doge, has accomplished amazing things, exposing the waste, the fraud, the abuse by the billions and hundreds of billions of dollars. Some are saying that he said that they could cut $2 trillion out of the federal budget. It's interesting when you hear most of these budget talks, they always talk in terms of 10 years. And now they're saying, well, Doge has only cut about $300 or $400 billion a year. Well, over 10 years, that would be $3 or $4 trillion if they continue with the cuts. And that's the big fight on the big, beautiful bill. And we're going to get an update in the next hour from Liz Peek, a Fox contributor, from Senator Marsha Blackburn, about the status of the big, beautiful bill. Where is it? And where is it going to go? But Musk is leaving Doge. He's going to go back to running Tesla, running his other businesses. And a lot of the media are saying, well, he's leaving because Tesla's stock took a hit. Well, Tesla's stock is coming back. It took a hit like everything else when the tariffs were announced. And by the way, Canada dropping their reciprocal tariff raising, even though they were already hitting the U.S. harder on tariffs than we were hitting them. You're seeing other countries lining up to strike their deals to lower their tariffs and make trade more fair, more open, more reasonable, and more reciprocal. But Musk is leaving, and the media is saying it's because Tesla took a stock hit. He's lost money. He's doing it to go back and make money. He's leaving because he was a special government employee. Musk came in as a special government employee, and there are thousands of them, but you can only serve about 130, 135 days within any 365-day period as a special government employee. Musk was not getting a salary. But he also didn't have to comply with what would have been almost impossible review of all his assets and transactions and business dealings. He put those into trust and served working literally 18-hour days or more on the Doge project. But you're limited to a certain number of days. Those days were always going to run up about this time of year based upon when he started work and when that special government employee time would come to an end. It's coming to an end. So he's leaving like was always intended, like was always the plan, like was always the law. And yet the media is making it seem like he's having to leave because he's got, you know, to get back to his business. His business is doing fine. And we'll hear more about that as he returns to the business world. I'm Steve Gill. We'll return with more of the Todd Starnes Show in just a moment. We've got Liz Peek joining us next from Fox News contributor. And welcome back in. This is the Todd Starnes Show. Steve Gill filling in for Todd. If you want to join us on the phone lines with your comments on some of the news today, is there a bigger boss than Trump in the White House bringing the president of South Africa in, and then as he denies white genocide, showing him the video, saying, turn down the lights. Let's go to the tape, Jimmy, and shows him the video. 901-260-5926, the number. That's 901-260-5926 if you want to talk about that. And who was really running the White House under Joe Biden? We know he wasn't mentally competent, physically competent enough. Now he knows that he was hiding more than just his cancer diagnosis. You know, they were also hiding who was running the show during that time. So if you want to comment on any of those items on the Todd Starnes Show, 901-260-5926. Joining us for a little update on the big, beautiful bill that is moving its way towards a vote eventually, maybe sooner rather than later, is Liz Peek, a Fox News correspondent and regular guest here on the Todd Starnes Show. Liz, good to have you back with us.
Hi. Sorry, so glad to join you. Thanks for having me.
I love the fact
good
that
morning, because you know my morning has gone on forever. But anyway,
and the nights. I was talking with a couple of my friends in Congress, and they're doing these markups and hearings till 1 o'clock in the morning, and moving slowly, but you are seeing progress in the Senate. 100% vote in favor of no tax on tips. Even some of the Democrats who opposed it when Trump first came up with it, they called it a scheme, they called it a joke, they called it a clown show, and then they voted for it.
Yeah, because they're completely afraid that if they don't, they're going to get totally hammered. Remember, Kamala Harris also was dismissive of it, and then it became part of her campaign. She basically stole the idea. And why? Because in particular, Nevada is a swing state. Trump, it was one of those wonderful sort of Trump moments when he was in Nevada campaigning and he sort of looked at the waitress and said, hey, what about no tax on tips? Would that be a good thing for you? And of course she responded gleefully. And so it became something he was campaigning for, and it was brilliant. I mean, it was totally a brilliant political move and basically left Kamala Harris in the dust. But yes, we are making progress on this bill. And I say we, because I think every Republican should be pulling for this agenda critical legislation to pass. I wish we were cutting more spending. I'm kind of with Chip Roy and some of these guys, Ralph Norman and others, who are not happy that spending isn't being cut more. But the reality is you have to kind of deal with political issues. And this is probably close to about as good as we can get. So, look, the important message here, and I hope your listeners are listening to this, is that if indeed this bill passes and the pro-growth aspects of it, lower taxes, immediate expensing of R&D and new capital equipment and things like that, if that indeed promotes the kind of growth that the president and his advisors think it will, then the additions to the deficit are much, much reduced. I mean, Kevin Hassett is saying if you go from 1.8, which is what the Congressional Budget Office is factoring in, to 3% growth, you basically eliminate the $4 trillion addition to the debt, or the deficit. So it's a big number. It's a big issue. It's astounding to me that Democrats, whether it's in my home state of New York, which I'm embarrassed to confess, or other parts of the country, never understand that if you lower taxes, you get more tax. You lower the tax rate, you get more tax revenue. And that has happened, I think, literally every single time that a state or the federal government has done that. And it will happen again in this time, too.
Yeah, the evidence is there. It happens every time. The problem, as you know, Liz, when the revenue increases because of the cuts, they just spend more. We can't outspend what they spend. If we can control the spending, which I think under President Trump and Republican House and Senate, we will be able to limit that spending. Then you will get the double whammy of increased revenue and getting the cuts, because the DOGE cuts really aren't even in place yet, and they're still to come, as the fraud, the waste, the abuse. So the cuts will come, and the revenue will produce those increases that you're talking about. Why, again, I think the House is making it the big, beautiful bill because of the rules that it has to all be cobbled together to be able to get passed. But why aren't the Republicans in the House bringing no tax on tips as an individual vote the same way it happened in the Senate? Make Democrats either go along or cast more bad votes.
Well, you know, it was a surprise vote in the Senate, as you probably know. And in fact, it was brought to the floor by a Democrat who basically, I don't know the origin of why she did it, but she did it. And they voted for it. And I think everyone was embarrassed to vote against it. They thought politically that would be pretty harmful. So I kind of agree with you. Get it out of the big, beautiful bill, because, of course, it will cost some money. It does factor into the reconciliation reckoning. So why not put it out separately right now while it's still top of mind? Get it out of the bill, vote on it, and then that's legislation that President Trump can sign tomorrow. I mean,
you mean not use the auto pin? You mean he'd actually sign that?
Yeah. By the way, I don't know about you, but this is one of these sort of issues that Trump raises and everybody sort of rolls their eyes. I think it's a real issue. I think that President Biden was not in command for a significant amount of time during his presidency. This auto pen was used. I mean, this is the last shoe to drop, in a sense, the last piece of the puzzle. For 4 years, you and I and others were saying, who's running the show? Who's in charge? Because we doubted that President Biden was and that he could manage that. Now we know pretty definitely he was not in control a lot of the time. So somebody in that White House is going to have to come forward and say, yes, it's true. Here are the three people who are basically putting legislation in front of him, or even not, and just passing it via auto pen. And I think this is a serious issue that's going to be explored and possibly litigated.
I'm a lawyer by background, Liz, and I explained earlier that if you're a 10-year-old, you can't sign a legitimate contract. If you're in a senior citizen center and have stage 4 dementia, you can't sign legitimate contracts because you have non compos mentis. If the president didn't have the mental capacity, are all of his appointments, all of his legislative actions, whether he used the auto pen or not, did he have the capacity to actually do any of these things?
Well, and apparently it turns out that this auto pen signing was visible and used on a gazillion things, on appointments, on the pardons, thousands of pardons. So I think there's going to be some effort to kind of discover the extent of it, when it really became the go-to thing. And what we know from his own admission is that he didn't know about some of the policies and EOs, executive orders, that he actually had passed. For example, the whole thing about banning further additions to LNG exports. He was asked about that in a White House meeting by a Republican, and he said, oh, no, I didn't do that. Yes, he did. I think it was Johnson. It could have been Kevin McCarthy. But that is, we know that happened. That is real.
Well, we know he had Dr. Jill Biden that was, you know, managing the cabinet meetings and other things. You know, how involved was she in the designation of auto pen? And now Jake Tapper today saying that Hunter Biden, you know, was essentially acting as the chief of staff and making decisions and making directives behind the scenes. Tim Burchett, Congressman Tim Burchett in Knoxville, says he believes that they might have been selling these pardons, that somebody, you know, who was running the auto pen was either getting job offers or benefits, and that ought to be explored. Will we ever get to the bottom of it? And if we do, can some of these actions be withdrawn?
That is a very good question. Can they be overturned? Can we get Ketanji Brown off the Supreme Court? I don't know.
That's I'll settle for that one. If we can only have one,
know, right?
I'll take that one. If we can only pick one, you can keep the pardons. If that one can be withdrawn, we'll go with that one. Tell me a little bit on the House side, or I guess the Senate side. They've done no tax on tips. What about no tax on overtime? And is this the backdoor way to get no tax on Social Security, which was a big part of the president's promise and certainly moved numbers in that over 65 class?
In that demographic. We'll see. I don't know what's in the Senate version. We have yet to see their approach to some of these issues. So far, all these things are having to be restricted, right? You can't have tax on overtime except up to a certain level. Because otherwise, every dollar of my pay is going to all of a sudden become overtime, right? I mean, that's kind of, unfortunately, people will game all these issues and changes. And so it's all somewhat constrained. But by the way, because of the rules of reconciliation, but the Republicans can dominate those rules. So they really need to kind of just get this done.
Bulldozer it through. Bulldozer through. Be like Donald Trump. Be a bull in a china shop. Let me ask another kind of side question. When you have these battles going on, the Democrats and their allies in the media have absolutely no qualms about just flat out lying. The 12 to 14 million people that are going to be cut off Medicaid because you've got 1.5 million illegals. You've got 7 million 18 to 35 year old healthy males who won't work 80 hours a month. When you break down who's being eliminated from Medicaid, people who deserve Medicaid aren't being cut off. Yet Republicans, and you and I are communicators, why do we fail as a party to be better communicators of the truth? The lie told loudly does not make it true.
I couldn't agree more. And why isn't anyone pushing back and saying, well, gosh, the whole point of taking these able-bodied single guys off of Medicaid is that then they'll go get a job, and then presumably they will be able to buy their own health insurance. I mean, it isn't like all those people are doomed to never have health coverage. It's just presumably they'll be in a position to access Obamacare or other programs which will get them health insurance on their own. I agree with you that the Republicans are completely, abjectly terrible at messaging, but it's also an embarrassment. I would be embarrassed if a Democrat and have that memo come out in the middle of the night and then be parroting the same words, the same phrases that everybody else in my party is using, which makes it all sound like we're automatons and don't have any individual ability to think through things on our own. And by the way, I think that's true some of the time. I mean, something will come out from headquarters, DNC headquarters or whatever, used to be from Nancy Pelosi, and all of a sudden, literally everybody the next day on TV would be parroting exactly the same.
Including the journalist, the so-called journalist.
Yeah,
look, and as a former 18 to 35-year-old male, those are the people who need health care, for the most part, the least. I don't think I saw a doctor
true.
A single time when I was between 18 and 35. So it's not like you're going to have all these people unless they have an accident. So that's where you need catastrophic care, cheap insurance, high deductibles, for the most part, what Obamacare prevented.
Yeah, and the Republicans should be basically putting it out there as an issue of fairness and also sustainability. If we keep blowing up Medicaid by putting people on the rolls who are not eligible, who should not be eligible, and who are not consistent with the original purpose of helping out pregnant, poor women who can't fend for themselves, then the program's not going to survive. I mean, that's really the point. And is it fair that you and I are working long hours to feed our family, provide health insurance, blah, 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 and someone else is taking advantage of the system? No, it's not. And we even know that, for example, in the disability system, that there's an unbelievable amount of scamming of that system that goes on. Even 60 Minutes, before it became such a left-wing program, did an expose on it. I mean, it's horrifying. And I think DOGE has revealed a lot of other areas in the federal government which are also prone to fraud. And to your point earlier, I've been very frustrated on camera. I'm always asking these Republican congressmen, where are the DOGE cuts in your bill? What are we assuming on this? And they don't have any answers because they really haven't been, in my view, terribly supportive of DOGE. Don't ask me why. But I would really like to see some of these numbers start to come through, where these cuts, these cancellations of programs and stuff actually begin to make a difference, because they should.
I work with a healthcare company as chief of staff to the CEO. We sell saline bags for about $3 a bag. The VA is paying $18 to $22 a bag. Why hasn't DOGE stopped that? That's a prime example.
Yeah.
Hospitals all over America aren't paying that, and yet VA, which is supposed to be getting the best deals, don't have people in place to figure that out. Liz Peek, always great to visit with you. We'll talk with you again soon, and keep up the great work. Keep the heat on them. Keep moving the big, beautiful bill.
You too.
Don't
you
let
too.
It turn
Thanks
out ugly.
Okay, take care.
We'll be back with more of the Todd Starnes Show. I'm Steve Gill filling in for Todd. If you want to weigh in on, will the big, beautiful bill turn out to be ugly or beautiful? 901-260-5926. We'll take your calls in a moment. And welcome back in. I'm Steve Gill, filling in for Todd Starnes. Todd will be back in the big chair in the Liberty University studios tomorrow. But in the meantime, we've got plenty to get into today. Again, I encourage you to go watch the news of President Trump showing he is the boss of bosses when he brings the South African president into the Oval Office and confronts him with the video proof of genocide happening in South Africa. And more importantly, you have Elon Musk, born in South Africa, an African-American, literally and figuratively, staring down this president of South Africa who initially was trying to deny that there is genocide going on against white farmers in South Africa, then acknowledging it, but not being able to answer why they're not prosecuting those who are promoting the same kind of genocide. If you want to comment on that or other items, 901-260-5926 is the number, 901-260-5926. By the way, Trump's fighting for our country to get it back on the right track. He's battling China. He's likely dumping treasuries to sink the dollar. They're facing tariffs that are having a sharp bite on the stock market. He's playing the long game for America, and he's putting Americans first. And like hard work, there's always going to be some pain, particularly a day or so after you do that workout. You've got to play smart, too. And you can secure your hard-earned savings in retirement with Vault U.S. Gold. The IRS-approved gold IRAs let you roll over your IRA or 401k with no commission, safe, simple, tax-smart, protecting your future. Do you want it in hand? Their direct delivery program can ship insured gold and silver right to your door, offering privacy, yours to store securely. You have it in hand, not just wondering where it might be. Whatever happened to that, you know, we're going to tour Fort Knox and find out if our gold's really there. Whatever happened to that audit? Anyway, you will have your real assets that you can hold and touch for the tough times. Call 833-511-GOLD. That's 833-511-4653. Or visit vaultusgold.com/Todd Starnes for your free investor kit. Tell them Todd Starnes sent you, and don't go unprotected. Again, get your gold. Put it in your own vault. Don't have to wonder whether they've got it at Fort Knox. One of the interesting stories this morning, Fox News actually embedded a reporter with ICE to do a raid in Los Angeles, and they brought the behind-the-scenes look at what was going on as they arrested dozens, including one Iranian, for a scheme that had stolen $83 million in Amazon goods. $83 million. Here I've been blaming the porch pirates for my missing Amazon packages. Who knew they were all in L.A. being stolen by these gang members? We'll be back with the final hour of today's show, of the Todd Starnes Show. I'm Steve Gill filling in for Todd, and we'll be back in just a few moments.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah. And welcome in. I'm Steve Gill, not Todd Starnes, just a little taller, but same conservative values to bring on board. And live from Liberty University studios, filling in for Todd today, but he will be back in the big seat tomorrow. In the meantime, we are joined by Senator Marsha Blackburn of Tennessee, who is in the middle of the fight for the big, beautiful bill, taking a quick break to give us a little update. And, Senator, good to have you with us.
I'm delighted to join you. Thank you so much.
Is it still beautiful, or has it got some ugly twinges to it at this point?
You know, Steve, the point is we need to come to a decision on what all is going to be this, or I should say the House members need to come to a point of decision on what you're going to put in it, send it over to us. Of course, the Senate is working off of a lower budget number than what the House had, and we also want to hit the $2 trillion number in cuts, and the House has $1.5 trillion in cuts that they are doing. So we're looking forward to getting the bill. We are looking forward to putting the Senate mark on it and then working out the differences with the House. The goal is to get President Donald Trump's agenda passed. It is what the American people wanted for. voted for. If we don't get this bill done, it will be the largest tax hike in history. So we need to pass it so that we get the largest tax cut in history. We continue to put money to deportations of criminal illegal aliens. We return our nation to energy dominance. We make certain that we root out waste, fraud, and abuse when it comes to Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and preserve those programs for people that deserve them, Medicare and Social Security for people that have paid into them. We also want to get tax off tips, off overtime, and pass my bill that would remove the tax off of Social Security.
You know, Marcia, the Senate, you know, went ahead with the no tax on tips with 100% vote the other day. I didn't think the Senate could agree 100% on anything if you're standing neck deep in a swimming pool. Most of those guys wouldn't agree they were wet.
Well, and it is so important to note that we do have such broad bipartisan support on those three provisions. And this puts more money into the pockets of people that have, in the case of tips and overtime, earned that money. In the case of Social Security, we don't need to be taxing taxes. We need to let seniors keep every penny.
As a senior, I applaud that specifically as a senior, Marcia. By the way, it seems to me that the Democrats always want to treat tax cuts as static and ignore the dynamic impact. Your friend Art Laffer in Nashville points out that every tax cut has always produced more revenue. It's just the Democrats and many Republicans can spend it faster than that revenue grows it. If we can control that spending, the revenue will be more than we're being, you know, given account for in this budget bill.
Well, you're exactly right about that. And when you look at no tax on tips, overtime, and Social Security, and what that means to a state like ours in Tennessee, where we don't have a state income tax, we're running off of a sales tax. And that means there is more money in the pockets of taxpayers, and they have the opportunity to buy the goods and services that they want for their families. And I think everybody should be able to keep those dollars in their pocket and not send them to Washington, D.C. to be wasted on programs we can't afford, programs that have outlived their usefulness, programs that are wasting money and are not accountable to the American people. And that is why we're working so hard to build some transparency and some accountability into these measures as we're working on the reconciliation bill.
You're not likely to get a lot of Democrat support except on no tax on tips, no tax on Social Security, those things. How do you cobble together the big, beautiful bill when you've got at least a handful of senators, Republican senators, who you can't really count on either? I mean, you can't count on any Democrats. How do you get some of those Republicans across the line?
And nobody's going to get everything that they want. And we certainly have been pointing this out. But something everyone should agree on is that we want to make certain we cut taxes. We do not want to see taxes raised on individuals. We all should also agree that we root out all the waste, the fraud, the abuse that is in some of these programs like Medicaid. You know, when you look at the fact that 15% of Medicaid is probably improper payments, when you look at the fact that in Medicare and Social Security, you've got as many as 3 million illegal aliens who have managed to get a Social Security number and receive Social Security and have become enrolled in Medicare. They don't deserve those programs. They have not paid into those programs.
And at this point, we don't even really have the numbers on that to include those kinds of cuts in this bill. Those cuts are still going to come in the next year or so as we identify those levels of waste and fraud, and we can start making those cuts at the level of different cabinet agencies.
You're exactly right. And we are waiting now on the administration to send us some of this information so we can pass what is called a rescission bill. And they have to request that we make those rescissions in the budget. And you're exactly right. That cuts into the baseline, the bottom line, and removes that spending. And we can pass those rescission bills at a 51-vote margin, just like we can pass the reconciliation bill at a 51-vote margin.
Marcia, this is such common sense. Why do guys like Chip Roy and Massey and some in the House who are saying, I want cuts, and look, I want cuts too, I know you do, you've been fighting for them since you were in the state senate in Tennessee, why don't they see that the cuts are still coming, but you got to get the wins when you get the wins? The Democrats are always incremental when it comes to raising taxes. Why can't we be incremental in cutting spending?
You know, and I had this exact discussion with someone this morning, and Steve, when you and I were fighting the imposition of a state income tax, when I was in the state senate, we talked a lot about the need to incrementally cut. Remember, I had the 1, 2, and 5%
right.
across board spending cuts, and that is something that there again is common sense. This is the first bill that we can pass, but it won't be the last. And we're going to be able to continue to do rescissions. I've recommended that every month we do a rescission package so that we are showing what we're cutting, and we're going to continue to root out waste, fraud, abuse, and achieve efficiencies. This is a generational opportunity for us, and I am so excited to be a part of President Trump's team, excited to be pushing to get this power and money out of Washington, D.C., send it back to the state, and let the states do what we as Republicans have long advocated. They are the innovators. This is where we should be getting our best ideas.
And we haven't even started the process of moving some of those federal agencies out of D.C., saving, you know, money there, and moving, I don't know, the Department of Agriculture to Kansas, the, you know, FBI to Huntsville or something. There, again, there is so much more to come if we'll take the wins we get. I know you've got to run here quickly.
That's
let
right.
me ask you about a couple of other quick things. You were in the Oval Office when they had President Trump sign the Take It Down Act of removing non-consensual intimate material from the web. I know you wish you were there earlier today when President Trump was confronting the South African president with the proof of white genocide, but you were there on a pretty good day with the Take It Down Act.
Yes, indeed. That is a piece of legislation that has come before us. Senator Cruz and I were there along with two members from the House that have worked on this. It holds the social media companies responsible when you have this imagery that is on their sites and AI-altered pictures and things. They have to remove this and get it off of their site. And so it puts in place that instruction and also penalties, and I was delighted that the president chose to have a Rose Garden signing for this legislation, and very grateful for Mrs. Trump's support of this legislation. I'm looking forward to doing more in this vein. As a matter of fact, I'm heading down to chair my committee, Judiciary Committee. I chair Privacy, Technology, and the Law. And Martina McBride and some others are coming in. We're doing a hearing on my no fakes bill, which also protects the content, the name, image, likeness of our singers, songwriters, authors, publishers. And we're looking forward to having that hearing starting at 2:30.
There were a few in your congressional district and a bunch in Tennessee, so I know they appreciate that. And President Trump actually signed the Take It Down Act. He didn't even use the auto pen, so that was a historic
exactly
moment as well.
Fine.
Real quickly, I know you just did an op-ed about the need to stop illegal immigration. I know you're also focused on this kind of, you know, come in as a tourist, have a baby, make them an American citizen. So you're working on a lot of different fronts.
Yes, indeed. I did have an op-ed supporting the deportations that have taken place in Middle Tennessee. They have apprehended about 200 criminal illegal aliens. 95 have criminal convictions. 31 of these were previously deported and had come back in the country. And Steve, you remember last year we had a 42-year-old restaurant owner who was murdered after an illegal alien who had been deported and come back four times. He murdered this guy. He was trying to steal tools out of his truck. And people in Tennessee support the deportations. They support my End Birth Tourism Act. This legislation would prohibit these brokers who sell access to coming into the U.S., getting a visa, coming into the U.S., staying in a place like a hotel that the broker company owns, and women from Russia, China, different countries, wealthy women come in. They have their baby here. They get that birth certificate and the social security number, and then they exit the country. The child can come back in the country for education. And then when they turn 21, they implement chain migration. We know that this is a business that makes tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars every year. It accounts for about 33,000 births by pregnant women who are on these tourist visas every year. It needs to stop.
Well, keep up the good work on that. Last quick question. A lot of speculation about your future and a possible gubernatorial run in Tennessee. What's next for my friend Marcia?
We are seriously looking at it. We think it's going to be a great time for the state of Tennessee with President Trump sending power on education, energy, healthcare, regulation, benefits back to the states. Tennessee should be our nation's conservative leader. I think not only is it the golden age for America, I think it is for our great and wonderful state.
I'm waiting to see those Make America Tennessee caps that I'm sure you guys will be putting out soon. Senator Marcia Blackburn from Tennessee, great friend, longtime friend. Keep up the great work. Go get that big, beautiful bill done and drag a few Democrats across the line with you. Thanks for being with us. Marcia Blackburn, Senator from Tennessee. Again, longtime friend. We fought the state income tax battle in Tennessee a few decades ago. I've aged. She hasn't aged a day. We'll talk more about it in a moment. I'm Steve Gill, filling in for Todd Starnes, live from the Liberty University studios in Memphis. And we will be back. Your calls, 901-260-5926, 901-260-5926. Are there enough cuts in the big, beautiful bill, or do we need to be a little patient, get a win when we can, and move on? We'll talk about that in a moment. And welcome back in. I'm Steve Gill, filling in for Todd Starnes from the Liberty University studios in Memphis. Todd will be back in the house tomorrow, just taking some time to do some business today. You can join us on the phone lines if you want to talk a little bit about the big, beautiful bill. Is it going to have enough cuts? I mean, some Republicans don't think it cuts enough. And as we talked with Senator Marcia Blackburn earlier, yeah, it has revenue enhancements built in that will allow the revenue to expand, and cuts are still coming. Can they get enough Republicans to pass the big, beautiful bill? President Trump's putting his pressure on it. You've got leadership in the House and Senate that are trying to get it done. Can they actually get the deal done, knowing they're not going to really have any Democrats to help cast votes to actually keep the tax cuts in place rather than a huge tax increase? You know, one of the things that's always frustrating is the Democrats always scream about tax cuts for the rich, tax cuts for the wealthy. Trump and the Democrats are fighting over tax cuts because Republicans just want to give their tax cuts to their billionaire buddies. Well, this federal income tax only hits about half of the earners. Only about half the country pays any of the federal income tax. The bottom half pays zero when it comes to federal income taxes. And the bottom half, when you add the federal benefits that come, whether it's health care, whether it's other food stamps or anything else, they're taking money out, not putting money in. So you cannot have a tax cut for the half that's already paying no federal income taxes. How are you going to cut taxes below what people are already paying? Zero. You can't. So it's again, more of the baloney that Democrats, you know, spread out there that, it's just a tax cut for the rich. Well, only the rich half are paying. So if you're going to cut taxes, you can only cut taxes for those who are paying taxes. And again, you would think that'd be pretty good common sense. But again, Republicans fail so often in making that distinction, while Democrats figure they can lie loudly and that'll convince the bobbleheads to nod along no matter what the truth is. The bottom line is the same thing with the Medicaid cuts. We keep hearing from the Democrats that this big, beautiful bill cuts Medicaid for people who need health care. Well, as I pointed out with some of our earlier callers and guests, you know, look, I was an 18 to 35-year-old male at one point. It's been a while. But 18 to 35-year-old males, unless they're having a motorcycle accident, a car wreck, or do something stupid like 18 to 35-year-old males tend to do that causes them to have an accident and get hurt, that's the group least likely to need health care, to need health insurance. You know, during that period of time, I paid a lot of money for health insurance and didn't draw anything down because I wasn't seeing doctors, because I wasn't sick, I wasn't ill, I wasn't needing to see a doctor. Are there exceptions? Are there some people who have debilitating illnesses as young men? Yes, but it is a rarity. And having Medicaid cover 18 to 35-year-old able-bodied males who don't want to work 80 hours a month is a waste of our money, and it ought to be cut. Republicans need to explain that better. We'll talk more when we come back. Get to your calls at 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Starnes Show.
And welcome back to the Todd Starnes Show. This is Todd Starnes stepping in just briefly for my good buddy Steve Gill, who's doing a great job filling in. I want to go right to our newsmaker line, and it's always a pleasure to talk to one of the people in America who's trying to keep our audience healthy, and we really like that. Kim Bright joins us from MyBrightCord.com. Kim, hope you're doing well today.
I'm doing great, Todd. Thanks for having me back.
Kim, we've been talking a lot this week and really the past couple of weeks about RFK Jr. and the incredible job he is doing declaring war on Big Pharma. And I have to get your take on the big press conference on Monday with President Trump and RFK Jr. How do you think they're doing so far?
I give them 100%. I think they're doing great. I mean, that was a great press conference. They're, you know, did the equalization of pricing for the pharmaceuticals. So the good old USA is no longer subsidizing all those other countries, the drug research and their drugs. I mean, we were 75% of Big Pharma's money was coming from the United States. And we're only 4.2% of the world population. So this was crazy. And then, you know, they're putting an end to that now. And I loved what Dr. Oz said, Todd, that it's our patriotic duty to be healthy, because I happen to agree with him on that one. You can't make America great again without making us healthy again.
Kim, I have embraced that movement, the MAHA movement. So I'm trying to do my part to trim down a little bit, which is hard living in Memphis where everything is barbecued or deep fried. And I will tell you, Kim, when the president kept talking about his fat friend, I kept thinking, geez, hello, Mr. President. I prefer well-rounded.
I had a good laugh at that, too, because then he said, and that medicine you're taking is not working. So
no, and it's costing an arm and a leg.
That's right. And you know that Big Pharma has dominated our health care system, and they created that big machine, that sick care system, instead of an actual health care system. And it's always been in their best interest and bottom line to keep us sick, Todd. And they just keep wanting to write scripts and keep us sick and address symptoms rather than the cause. So, you know, this is really, really been a problem for all Americans, and it's high time that we stopped it and started headed the right direction.
And Kim, that's where BrightCore is so important, because I mean, you have recognized this, you've realized, wait a second, they really are trying to keep us unhealthy. That they want us to be sick, and you've figured out a way to make sure that Americans stay healthy and they can have very vibrant lives.
Well, I've been doing this for almost 50 years, helping people
wow.
get healthy before you know, Maha was around. I got called every crazy name in the book, and you know, all kinds of stuff happened where I was trying to teach people how they could help themselves with natural ways to keep themselves healthy and not require the surgeries, not get fat, not get diabetes. You know, all of this has affected Americans' health, this big pharma that's been, you know, around for decades and affecting generations. I mean, we have now the highest rates of cancer, autism, diabetes, heart disease, and cognitive disorders. I mean, top. This is crazy. 129 million Americans have at least been diagnosed with one chronic disease. That's insane. And so, you know, this has got to stop. I mean, I am so grateful. I thank the Lord every day that we have President Trump, who is common sense, that we that he brought on RFK Jr., who is common sense and has known these bad guys that have been out there poisoning our air, our water, our food supply with so many different chemicals. And we've been ingesting these chemicals, and this is why we're sick. And it's high time. We all understood this, and we all got together, and we decided we're not going to support those industries anymore. It's high time we start eating the food that God intended for us to eat.
And that food is something called kimchi. And I find this fascinating, Kim, because I'm from the South, but I did spend some time in Sacramento, California. I'll never forget this. I was invited to a church supper. And they had all the fixings, you know, fried chicken, all the other stuff. And then they had this thing called kimchi, which kind of looked like coleslaw. It really packs a punch, you know, to be honest. But you figured out a way to make this a part of a healthy lifestyle.
Well, we have. But before I get into that part of it, because I set up Bright Core Nutrition about 28 years ago. We're headed into our 29th year. So we've been around for a while. We must be doing something right. But I also wanted to talk about another poison substance that they've been putting in to our drinking water supply, which I'm so proud of. Our Governor DeSantis 5 days ago was second state to take fluoride out. You know, this stuff, I'm telling you what, there's a whole history on it. And the people that originally got it in our drinking water were the aluminum companies. This is a byproduct of that. They didn't know what to do with it. And now today, the fluoride that's coming from is the phosphate fertilizer industry. It's a neurotoxin. It's proven to lower IQ. And it's even illegal to dump in lakes and rivers, but it's okay to put in our drinking water. So the thing is now our water's going to get cleaned up. In order to stay healthy, we need to drink cleaner water. We got to exercise. But the most important thing is to fix our gut health, and the food that you just talked about, kimchi, is the thing that will fix our health. Because like you said, when you're down south, you're eating barbecue, you're eating fried foods, you're not eating a lot of foods that have fiber in it, and that is healthy for our gut. And most people don't eat enough healthy gut foods, Todd. So this is why we decided to utilize this food that's been around for centuries. It's from Korea. They eat it every day. Some of them even eat it at every meal. And the powerful substance that it becomes is because of fermentation. Fermentation, let's say you live in the South, you know, chow chow, or you know, pickles, you know, sauerkraut, things like this. Those are fermented foods that all of us have eaten. But kimchi is a strange food because it's from Korea, and it's got a real strange smell and taste, and most Americans don't like it. Like you said, it's a little overpowering.
A little pungent.
But it is the most, it's a pungent thing, yes. But the thing is that it is the most powerful, that's the pungency in it. It's the most powerful of all those fermented foods I mentioned and all the other fermented foods because it has these unique strains of that good bacteria that go in and kill off the good guys. I like to think these special unique strains are like the special ops forces, like the Green Beret and the Navy SEALs, and they can go in and target the worst pathogens that we've got in our gut from eating too many fried foods, from eating too much barbecue, from eating too many sugary desserts, banana pudding, all that good stuff that everybody likes. Well, we got to take care of our gut because if you love that barbecue and steaks and cheeseburgers and fried foods, you absolutely need to pay attention to your gut, and you absolutely have to have something like kimchi every day, because otherwise you're going to get critters growing down in that gut that aren't healthy, and you're going to just keep expanding out and not feeling good.
I don't want critters in my gut, Kim. I don't. So I will say this. The best part about it, I know somebody out there in like Gainesville, Georgia is thinking, I'm not gonna put kimchi on my hot dog. And the good news is you don't have to, because you have figured out a way to put this in the form of a capsule. And I want you to tell our audience about Brightcore's Kimchi One capsules. And folks, the website, mybrightcore.com/Todd Stearns. That's mybrightcore.com/Todd Stearns.
Well, here it is. These are the good guys. Like I said, it affects our whole body. In fact, there are studies out there that show the impact on obesity. When you take these capsules every single day, you get lower body mass index. You get a smaller waistline. You're boosting your metabolism. You're curbing your appetite, and you're killing off those bad critters in your gut. Because believe me, those will wreak havoc in your whole body. It will help diabetes and heart disease and brain fog and all that. So you've got to get rid of those guys, and this is the way to do it. So we have taken the power of kimchi, put it in a capsule. You take three a day, and you're going to get all those benefits. And that's the important thing here, is we have to pay attention to our gut, because that's where health starts, Todd. That's where sickness starts. So let's start paying attention to our gut and making sure that it is as healthy as we can have it, especially since we indulge in all these other foods down here in the South. We need this fermented food.
Well, I'm loving this. And it's you know, the weight loss journey started a couple of weeks ago for me, and it's a process. And what I love about Brightcore is that you guys do it the natural way. You know, this is one of those products where, yeah, you're going to be able to lose weight, and your face is not going to melt off like one of the other unnamed products out there. And we've all read the tabloids. But in when you take these incredible Kimchi One tablets, or pills rather, it really does have an impact when you're out there trying to lose weight.
It surely does. And like I said, there's that study on obesity. There's many more. The Koreans have volumes of studies on how kimchi, taking kimchi, affects skin conditions, clears them up, affects your hair. It actually helps hair growth, helps hair volume. And as we're getting older, our hair's falling out. It's breaking off. We all need that. It's great for diabetics and your blood sugar. There's so many studies, because this has been in Korea for centuries. They know the power of this food, Todd, and it's high time that everybody in America started knowing the power of this food, too, and they can do it by taking the Kimchi One capsules from Brightcore every single day.
And let's talk about that, because you have an incredible, you're incredibly kind and gracious and generous, Kim, and you guys have an exclusive offer for all of our listeners and viewers today. So tell us about it.
Well, I sure will. We are going to give you 25% off with the code Todd Stearns. So you go to mybrightcore.com/Todd Stearns. And again, that's mybrightcore.com/Todd Stearns, and you get 25% off. But I like to educate people. I've been doing this for almost 50 years, and I like to make sure that it's the right thing for people. So please call in. We've got this wonderful staff. Call 888-927-5980, and we're going to give you up to 50% off your order, plus free shipping. And that's only when you call in now, when you call 888-927-5980. And we want to make sure this product's right for you. So call us, and if you're one of those first callers, you're going to get a free bottle of vitamin D3 as well. So free shipping, up to 50% off, and that free vitamin D3 for the first 100 callers. Call 888-927-5980, and let's make America's guts healthy again, Todd.
I love this. Get rid of the critters in your gut. That is the rally cry today. Kim, always good having you on the show. And again, folks, I want to give out this information. 25% off with the code Todd Stearns. Go to mybrightcore.com/Todd Stearns. You can call them right now. If you call them right now, you're going to get up to 50% off on your order, plus free shipping only when you call in. That's 888-927-5980, 888-927-5980. And the first 100 callers, you're going to get a free bottle of vitamin D3. Again, the number to call, 888-927-5980. Kim, always fun hanging out. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And get those bad critters out of there and reduce those waistlines. Let's make America healthy again and make America great again. God bless you all.
All right. God bless you. Kim Bright, ladies and gentlemen, on the Patriot Mobile Newsmaker line. All right. We've got to take a break again. That number, 888-927-5980. That's 888-927-5980. If you call right now, you're going to get 50% off your first order, free shipping, and the first 100 callers, you are going to get a free bottle of vitamin D3. Coming up, my good friend Steve Gill continues on the Todd Stearns Show.
And welcome back in. I'm Steve Gill, filling in for Todd Stearns. He came in to do a quick interview there, and man, he comes walking in the room. I thought I'm getting fired mid-show. Wouldn't be the first or last time. But, Todd will be back in the big seat tomorrow. In the meantime, finishing up a busy news day today. And again, one of the top stories that's attracting a lot of attention on X and everywhere else is this amazing Oval Office meeting between the president of South Africa and President Trump, where President Trump literally showed video from South Africa of the threats to white farmers there. The president of South Africa had brought a couple of golfers, South African golfers, including Retief Goosen, a white South African golfer, to basically say, see, you know, whites aren't being killed, except Retief Goosen volunteered that his dad was a farmer and has plenty of farmer buddies who are being chased off their farms, having their farms burned and being told if they don't leave, they'll be killed. So an amazing event in the Oval Office today. You know, the second most amazing one since you had President Zelensky in the Oval Office with J.D. Vance and President Trump doing the tag team on him. Still, Zelensky refusing to recognize the truth on the battlefield in Ukraine, that the Russians are winning and that the war is going to end with Ukraine losing. And the longer he holds out, the more Ukrainians die. And yet that confrontation in the Oval Office paired in comparison to what happened today with the president of South Africa denying that there are threats being made to white farmers, the Boers, who've been in South Africa for hundreds and hundreds of years. It's interesting. You have some African-Americans in this country complaining about these white 59 or so refugees who've been allowed into the country, that they should just go back where they came from, go back to Europe or wherever they came from. Well, they've been in South Africa for, you know, 500 years, maybe longer. Would that same racist comment be tolerated if people said, okay, all the African-Americans here in the U.S., go back to Africa where you came from? Because a lot of the African-Americans in this country and generations before are less than 400 years. So using the same South African theory of go back to Europe or wherever you white people came from, could you get by with saying that about blacks in the U.S.? Go back to Africa. And it's interesting, you had the confrontation between Catherine Levitt, the press secretary, Carolyn Levitt, the press secretary, when I can't remember if it was Hakeem Jeffries or someone had made some racist comment towards her, and she pointed out that his family immigrated not from Africa, but from like Jamaica, you know, a couple hundred years ago. So the idea that these white South African farmers who provide about, I don't know, 80-85% of the food that Africans consume from their farms, when Africans start starving because the farmers have been driven out, the farms have been burned, and nobody's working the fields and growing the crops, what happens then? Will U.S. taxpayers be asked to feed the starving, hungry in South Africa? And Africa, with the resources that Africa has in terms of minerals and mining and major expanses that would be prime for agriculture, why is Africa so destitute? Now it gets blamed on colonialism and that hundreds of years of colonialism and slavery taking blacks from Africa and shipping them around the world, that's the reason that Africa has not progressed in hundreds of years. Why is that with the minerals and the resources that are available in Africa? Is it corruption, like some point out? You know, when you see corrupt countries, there is a pattern. It has nothing to do with race, has nothing to do with ethnicity or religion or anything else. Corrupt countries fail to progress. You look at some of the destitute countries in the Middle East. You look at corruption. You look at some of the countries in South and Central America. You look at some of the countries around the world. Corruption seems to be the critical element. Todd will be back tomorrow. Thanks for being with me today. I'm Steve Gill, and we'll talk soon.